The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Bill Myers.
Good morning. It is Find Your Phone Friday, 770-563-3770-KMED. Find Your Phone Friday. One of those things. I always remember, that was actually a play that I remember years ago that Rush Limbaugh, for a while when they, this was after the 9/11 attacks and you had Bin Laden hiding away and... And I think Snurtley did a parody or something like that at one point. It is Find Your Phone Friday. We will try to find your phone in the deep dark cave. So it just kind of I just remember that. Boy, we still miss Rush, don't we? That's for sure. It's 12 minutes after six. But anyway, we're still talking about things that are going on here in Southern Oregon, Southwest Oregon, and the state, and the country. And the country is crazy, you know, as usual. And I'm happy to take your calls and we can discuss the craziness and laugh at the absurdity of it all because that's healthy. Okay. 770-563-3770-KMED. Wouldn't look at interest rates being cut anytime soon. U.S. employers adding 303,000 jobs in March. Labor market remains robust, apparently. And it unemployment rate fell to 3.8%. You know, the funny thing is, though, when we look deeper into these statistics, maybe I can talk with Rick Manning about that here in the next 20 minutes. We'll have him on for the D.C. Swamp Update. He used to be a labor guy, a number cruncher for the labor department a number of years ago under the Bush administration. And so he knows this stuff pretty well. I remember seeing some reporting that is indicating that the vast majority of the people getting some of these job creation numbers that they're talking about are actually the immigrants. Immigration has a lot to do with it. And a lot of the high techies being brought in for the Facebooks and the data farm type people. I don't know if we're going to be able to get that granular with these stats, but anyway, it would appear to be stronger. And of course, stronger job news will likely mean that the stock market will be a little bit soft because they really want things to look soft. So that way the federal government, Federal Reserve says, we're going to cut interest rates back down. And then we'll have free money and bring the punch bowl. And then Wall Street is really happy. And wash, rinse, repeat. And the inflation continues to eat the money that we have, we regular folks in the middle class. But anyway, we'll talk with Rick about that. But that's the latest stat. Of course, I don't know, can you believe the stat? A lot of it is politicized. Speaking of politicized... President Biden held a call with Netanyahu yesterday, Daybreak Insider reporting, demanding a ceasefire, threatening to deny aid. And it appears that Netanyahu blinked and has opened up another pathway over in Gaza, trying to get more human aid, more aid going into the Palestinians. So that's the latest on that sort of situation. A little closer to home here. C&D Lumber has shut down in Riddle. This is the press release that I got this morning from them. I heard NBC5 talk about it a moment ago. C&D Lumber announces the permanent closure of our operations founded at 1890, 130-something years. They'd been here in Southern Oregon, Coos County. Cornerstone of the timber industry. And all has to do with market conditions, volatility, and I would imagine most likely lack of timber supply. We're surrounded by timber. It all burns every summer. But it's morally inferior to put it into a place like C&D Lumber where it gets productive. It's much better to burn it so that we can hear everybody talking about, oh, I love the smell of the burning timber in the summertime because that's the smell of the forest being restored. You burn it to the ground, right? Well, as long as these people are the ones that are in charge for the most part, that have managed to get that one vote more than 50%, that's the sort of stuff that we get. Mark Roberts, remember Mark Roberts, we talked with him off and on. He's run for some offices from time to time, and he was writing about the timber protests around Grants Pass, around the Williams, around the Williams area. The activists from Pacific Northwest Forest Defense protesting the cutting of old growth in BLM near Grants Pass, sitting in the several hundred-year-old Douglas fir trees and things. He says, and Mark says, Bill, this is cool. Can't even do forest work on 10,000 acres in Grants Pass. Nowhere to be seen in local news, really. The six contractors that bought the logging rights will be price pointed out of the terms of the contract or out of biz by the time this makes it through the courts. Happens all the time. Yeah, it's pretty irritating, Mark. Once again, that goes back to the elections have consequences sort of thing. Got a little bit of that going on. Well, if we can't cut trees down, at least we can have tree climbers. I was reading in the RV Times this morning that more than 24 arborists from around the state will be in Rogue River this weekend. It's a tree climbing competition. They'll be competing in... See, that's it. That's it. This will be kind of like what the dim bulbs. There were some dim bulbs in Jacksonville a number of years ago. I continue to pick this. By the way, Jacksonville people are not dumb, but there were some in the Jacksonville Vision 2040. I remember they were doing the survey when they had this visioning process when the stakeholders, get together and talk about where we would want to, progress the area, that kind of thing. And they were talking about, since we're not going to cut trees, we're not going to allow them to cut trees, let's have the out-of-work timber workers tow rickshaws around the city of Jacksonville, and that way we don't have to have evil cars going through it. And that's how we'll work it. In other words, we go back to the 1890s. That's how everything will be done. Now, I know that was just one survey in one city, but I always remember that. Having lived in Jacksonville, it's just, oh my gosh, I'm surrounded by morons, that kind of thing. But maybe this is the next tourism attraction. We can get the Travel Oregon to get here and said, well, we can't cut trees and there's no way to make anything out of trees. So you can come. We can have timber fire smoke tourism. We can get Travel Medford all over that. Travel Oregon all over that. Travel Medford. And then we could see when it's not burning, we can come see old loggers climbing trees. Right? We can do that. But in all seriousness, this sounds like a fun thing. 2024 Southern Oregon Tree Climbing Competition running Saturday, tomorrow, and Sunday at Palmerton Park Arboretum in Rogue River. First of 5 regional competitions in the U.S. and Canada. This could be the next big growth industry for Southern Oregon for tourism. Come watch us burn the trees, and the ones that aren't burnt, come and watch the out-of-work timber people climb them. The headlines almost write themselves, don't they? It's 19 minutes after 6. This is the Bill Myers Show. What's on your mind? 770-5633 on KMED.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Doing your own taxes and lost in the paperwork and questions that you can't answer? Peace of mind is only a phone call away. As a former Internal Revenue agent, Pat Hurley can help you relax. Call him at 774-1040. What an easy number.
Well, Dad, this is not a shocker, so you don't have to sit down for this one.
Hit me.
Father and Son Jewelry has won best in Southern Oregon.
How many years in a row has it been?
15? I've sort of lost count.
Well, don't let it go to your head. We built our reputation on what we do today, not yesterday.
I agree. Becca, you look like you have something to say.
Just want to say thank you, Southern Oregon, for voting your Father and Son Jewelry best again. We've been your favorite since I can remember.
Hi, I'm Lisa with Kelly's Automotive Service, and I'm on KMED and KCMD.
I would have had Chris on because he is a naysayer on the 5 commissioners and the various things. But Chris, when you're cussing at me on the phone during the break, you have painted yourself as a moron, not worthy of coming on the air. You more or less have taken yourself out of consideration. And he says that I'm irresponsible for talking about cutting trees. All right. Because I live in a ecologically sensitive area. Well, an ecologically sensitive area is a government-defined situation. It's a falsehood, in my opinion, Chris, okay? That's our bottom line here. What we've done right now is that if you just look around Southern Oregon, if you go out into the forests, and no, I'm no expert on the Williams tree, but if you can't cut anything, if you can't even cut dead and dying timber, you can't salvage log, you can't do anything else, and we're looking at the mills shutting down. Mother Nature's going to harvest this stuff somehow. Herman Bertschinger is absolutely right. He was in the firefighting industry. He's like, one way or the other, as these trees continue to grow and mature, we continue to add to the woodiness of around us all over the place. Either we do something with it, or eventually the next lightning strike comes, and then it burns. That's all there is to it. It's not that complex. No one's talking about clear-cutting everywhere around here. None of that's been going on for decades. But even the original shutdown, Chris, and other people who might agree with Chris, the original shutdown of the timber industry over the spotted owl was a lie. The whole thing was a lie. And even as we talk about these this ecological sensitivity, because of the spotted owl, and now what do we know now? That was a lie. The spotted owl was having difficulty because the barred owl was kicking its butt out there. And so now, what are we talking about now to solve the ecologically sensitive problems here in Southwest Oregon? The Forest Service is talking about going out and killing thousands upon thousands of barred owls to give the spotted owl that was supposedly being killed by the timber workers, which hardly exist any longer. That's the solution. It's like, oh, come on. You either do something with these forests, or they eventually will burn. It's just a fact of Mother Nature. But yeah, if you call up on the show, you call me up during in the break and you're cussing, you're done. Anyway, 770-5633. 770-KMED. Meanwhile, City of Medford is considering tougher stance on outdoor burns. Tough new restrictions on outdoor burning could take effect in Medford before fire season. I don't know, did they actually approve that yesterday? We're supposedly going to talk about this. Medford City Council considering changing the city's municipal code to make it a misdemeanor to have a fire or other ignition sources in high-risk public areas from May 1st to September 30th, the typical months for the fire season. Signs would be placed along the Bear Creek Greenway, Prescott Park, and other greenways in the city, warning of criminal penalties. Fires or open burning would not be allowed, but would result in the citation up to a $250 fine. Oh, okay, $250 fine. There we go. It would be a misdemeanor. Just like fentanyl. Hey, maybe we could have drug deflection programs that we're going to have for the fentanyl. Maybe we can have a fire deflection situation. So, no, I'm only kidding about that. Speaking of City of Medford, I had another interesting email this last night. Let me see if I can find that. And actually, this is something good. Bob Shan wrote me about this, and he said he had some questions about this. Bill, the City of Medford and its partners in Jackson County are in the process of transitioning the region's public safety radio infrastructure from the old VHF technology to the new digital P25 system. Digital technology will significantly enhance communication among first responders and their ability to boost regional resilience. Also, $1 million plus for towers. These are the sort of things that we're looking at. And Bob says, Bill, what is digital P25? Any pros or cons? Well, I took a look into that, Bob. And it is just the modern way that public safety radio is being done. It's a fully digital system, unlike the old analog style that are still being used by many of the first responders. Jackson County's already been transitioning into these sort of things for quite some time. P25 is a worldwide standard, and it's so when you have a walkie-talkie, like you're a firefighter, or you're a police officer, or you're a forest fire worker, or, you know, whatever it is that you're doing. We know about the standard walkie-talkies and, you know, the way that they've been using those for a long, long time. Well, what the new ones will be, the P25s, are almost, it's not just voice communication, it's data communication. It's almost like it's data and it's voice, so you can be sharing data, pictures, you know, almost like handheld computers, really, is what we're talking about. It's almost like a super cell phone type system, but it is within the public safety realm. And so that ends up how it's working. And Motorola, of course, is very big on this, and it's a worldwide standard. And it is very spectrally efficient. In other words, it doesn't take a lot of bandwidth. It's very efficient there, so you can squeeze a lot more channels onto the public frequency bands in order to have lots of different ways for the firefighters and the public service people to communicate. I'm trying to explain a pretty complex system on the radio here, and I hope I'm able to do this okay. So that's good. Just about everything about P25 is good. P25 is a very good standard. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, and it is something that is very flexible for the future, and they're able to get out of these old legacy systems, which aren't being supported any longer anyway. It's kind of like how, you know, AM radio has been darkening over the years, and it's continuing to be by outclassed by other things, and it's going to FM and streaming and various other things, and HD and, you know, all these other things. It's kind of a big version of that in the public safety thing. So spectral efficiency is a big thing. You have a lot of interoperability between the different services. Instead of the firefighters have their one band and the police have their one band and never shall the two communicate, you know, that thing. It's a lot more flexible. Now, they consider this a really good thing that it is secure communications because, remember, it's digital. This meaning that it will be likely that it is tightly encrypted. Now, what's the downside of that? Because Bob was asking what might be the downside of that. Well, the days of being able to listen to the police or fire on a scanner might be very limited. I'm pretty sure if you're going to talk about secure communications that they're just going to encrypt everything, and there is going to be no longer anybody being able to listen to find out what fire or police are up to. I believe that might be what's going on. I know a lot of that's been getting shut away and locked away from public listening in the first place, unless maybe they release a certain amount of that to the online portals that will retransmit what's happening on the public safety bands. There's a good chance that you won't be able to really understand them unless you had the ability to decode it. You know, it'll be in encrypted. When they talk about secure communications, they want to operate in secret. Of course, that makes it difficult for the police to be monitored by regular folks. But then they'll say, well, that's a good thing because then the bad guys don't know what the police are up to either. But as far as government transparency, yeah, that could be the downside. So I can't really say for sure. I'm not that knowledgeable about it, but I'm just kind of going off of what the industry is saying about it. Okay? All right. 629 at KMED KCMD.
Joel here at Butler Ford, and if you're looking for a big truck with a small payment, I got you covered. Ford Super Duties are back in stock with lease deals where you can get a Ford F-250 for only $445 a month. For $445 a month, you can now tow and haul with a brand new big shiny F-250. Nobody knows how to make lease deals work on a Ford truck like Butler Ford. That's why businesses and individuals have been coming to us for years when they want a new truck for a low lease payment, like $445 a month on a new Ford F-250. And lease payments are even lower on F-150 and Ford Escapes. Butler says yes to big discounts and rebates. Butler says yes to giving you more for your trade. Butler says yes to $445 a month on a Ford Super Duty. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes south of Medford, right off of exit 19, where you know we've got your truck, your SUV, your certified pre-owned hybrid, and EV.
42-monthly lease payments is 7,500 miles per year with $97.48 cash or trade due at signing, excluding tax, license, title, and 250 dealer dot fee on vehicle with a cap cost of $48,125. Unapproved financing through Ford Credit. Offer expires 4/5/24.
News sponsored by Caveman Heating and Air. It's the climate and we control it. Call Caveman Heating and Air at 541-476-0009 or cavemanheating.com.
Good morning. I'm Natalie Cerna with your NBC5 Morning News Update. The Grants Pass City Council is researching ways to fund public safety after a recent food and beverage tax idea was not well received by the public. Last month, the City Council directed staff to create two ordinances, a food and beverage tax and a monthly utility fee, in an effort to close a $3 million funding gap for public safety. This week, the council said it's now considering a transitional tax of a 1% surcharge on retail gross revenue within the city. Mayor Sarah Bristol said the council wants to make a decision by July. Then, a federal grand jury charged a Medford man with illegally possessing and selling explosives. According to court documents, 56-year-old Wesley Allen Armstrong was arrested late March 2024 after selling CAS explosives, non-electric shock tube detonators, and fentanyl. Armstrong was charged with distributing explosives, possessing with intent to distribute and distributing fentanyl, and possessing a firearm in furtherance of a drug trafficking crime. Then the Oakland A's are now moving to Sacramento temporarily. The Athletics are already set to move to Las Vegas. The Tropicana Hotel shut down this week to make way for the A's new stadium. That facility won't be ready until 2028. Rather than extend their lease at the Coliseum, Sacramento's Sutter Health Park will play host for the 2025 through 2027 seasons. That's a look at your morning headlines. I'm Natalie Serna for NBC 5 News. Have a great day.
6:32, Rick Manning standing by. We'll talk with him in the D.C. Swamp Update in just a couple of minutes. Boy, I was talking with a friend, and he was going to call back and talk about it some morning in which a friend of his ended up having his fire insurance canceled on his property, his homeowner's insurance. And the only coverage he was able to get was because of these maps that everyone's talking about. Some are blaming the Jeff Golden fire map, Senate Bill 762, whoever it is, one way or the other. There are some real challenges sometimes with insurance. And this friend of a friend ended up only able to find coverage for like $18,000 a year. Wow. How are you going to do that? How are people going to make that that pencil for the most part? This really brings up the need to have a friend in the insurance industry to help you and to also not depend on just one company's offerings. And you do that with Steve Yancey at Sky Park Insurance. Steve Yancey at Sky Park, it's an independent, and he doesn't have just one company. It's dozens of companies that he ends up working with. And he'll shop coverage around for you. And you call him at 261-5444 and have him put together a quote, and he'll do some work for you. And sometimes you'll find out that the system or the deal that you have right now is probably the best you can and that you can get. And if so, it's at least good to know that he shopped it around. But if he can save you money and get you great coverage, wouldn't it be worth the phone call? Absolutely. 261-5444, 261-5444. Home, auto, life, I mean, business, I mean, it's all there, does it all. Sky Park Insurance, skyparkins.com.
At Sky Park, we make insurance easy.
It's home show season. The next one for Johnson Builders will be Southern Oregon Home Show at the Jackson County Expo in early May. But you don't have to wait to get low home show pricing right now for any building you need. From a small shop to a huge riding area, residential or commercial, Johnson Builders is the leading authority on post and frame construction in the region. So get a quote on your project and take advantage of special home show pricing. Visit Johnson.Builders.
Johnson Builders, building for your future.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMET and 99.3 KCMD.
This is the craziest party that could ever be. Don't turn on the lights because I don't want to see. Mama told me that's come.
The DC Swamp Update, Rick Manning, President of Americans for Limited Government, DailyTorch.com. Rick, how the heck are you? Welcome back.
Thanks. I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Heading into the weekend. Should be getting mom out of the hospital today and getting some various other things done. And, you know, it's like, you know, you get your mom in the 80s. You've got to keep everybody in the upright and locked position as best we can. Okay. And today, though, jobs report comes out. Now, you, of course, were a former labor guy under, what was it, the Bush administration?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, W.
All right. So you are very wonky when it comes to the statistics on jobs reports and what's happening with economic reports, which is why you are a national treasure, as far as I'm concerned, over at Americans for Limited Government. So now we have U.S. employers adding 303,000 jobs in March. Labor market remains robust. Unemployment rate falls to 3.8%. So is it a real strong report or is it a fake strong report? You know how sometimes things get revised over time.
Yeah, you never know about the revisions. That's the critical part. Because
yeah,
they can have wide swings. But you know, if you look at the last 3 months, you would say that the number in the numbers that they report in the survey of employers. There's two surveys. One's praised the unemployment report, which is they call households and they ask kind of what's going on, serious questions. Mm-hmm. The other is a report that's generated by employers who send in a questionnaire, and you have, you know, 100,000 or so, a little over 100,000 employers send in a questionnaire about what's happening in their company.
Yeah, what about the ones that survey ADP? ADP, you know, people who actually write the payroll checks.
Well, ADP is a totally separate thing, which is, you know, they're talking about, you know, their what's happening with their customers, and ADP being a major provider of personnel services, have a lot of customers. So they're giving a report based on what's happened with their customers over the course of that month. And that is, it tends to underreport smaller companies. Or very large companies for that matter that don't use the service. So it's an interesting indicator, but it isn't necessarily definitive.
Okay.
The government one, on the other hand, and you gave the top line numbers, and by and large, it's unchanged for last couple months. But the thing that's most interesting to me about the report is that between 20-25% of the new jobs that have been reported from the establishment survey of employers are government jobs. It's this particular report, over 70,000 were government jobs. Significant number, local, but about 9,000 more federal. What you're seeing is an expansion in particularly local hiring, local government hiring, and that is that's accounting for a significant portion of the overall job growth for the past year. As a matter of fact, the average government hiring over the last year has been over 50,000 a month, so that's 600,000 new government jobs.
Isn't that a little concerning in which year. It seems like a significant part of the hiring is the absolute non-productive side of the economy, doesn't really produce anything, but actually is a load on the economy?
Yes, and that's the point. It is the private sector is producing jobs and is doing well. Mm-hmm. But the government is producing more jobs than they proportionally exist in the economy. And so it is and as you said, government jobs, straight Keynesians would say government jobs create wealth by virtue of people going off, getting paid, and then spending money. Mm-hmm. And they put all sorts of multiplier effects in effect and all that stuff. The fact is that that's really not I kind of discount that. You'd far prefer to have private sector jobs where they're creating wealth while spending and with multiplier effects. So it is private sector jobs are more valuable than government jobs. And as you stated, it is, somebody has to pay for those government jobs. That's your taxes. So that's your, so it's a reflection on increased tax revenues that cities are accumulating, and cities and counties are accumulating. And, one could argue that may be driven largely by property tax increases and increased valuations of property that then create more money. So those are but that's the thing I find interesting out of it is, we're seeing the federal government grow more employees, but most importantly, your state and local governments are really driving a significant portion of the job growth in the country.
All right, this is perfectly sustainable, I'm sure, right? And we can just continue to do this. What role, if anything, does the Joe Biden, not Build Back Better, but Inflation Reduction Act? I noticed that Axios, kind of a left-wing, group, of course, out there reporting on government things going out there. But they're talking about the amazing benefits for the Biden administration, especially with Joe Biden running for re-election, because in red states, many of the Build Back Better or Inflation Reduction Act green energy scams are being dropped into red states that are normally Republican-leading, such as, Texas, places like that. Any thoughts on that?
Well, that's part of the plan. It's to try to turn red states blue, and it's Texas right now is their grid is highly dependent upon wind energy, as an example, because Texas has unique utility. I'm not going to get into all the variables. We did a big report on it a few years ago because I wanted to figure out how come they had a problem where a bunch of people almost froze to death because their grid went down. And Texas has essentially a socialized grid, electricity grid. It's self-contained within Texas, so they don't do power sharing around the country. And they don't. They made a decision they don't want one company to get too much power and have generate too much of the electricity that's generated. So they've created caps on how much a company can generate, a percentage of the grid. And as a result, you don't get investments in big projects. A big nuclear project costs a lot of money, but you'd have to have a lot more customers to expand what percentage of the grid your electricity were providing. You don't get new, natural gas burning facilities or coal burning facilities. Instead, what they're doing is filling the gap with relatively inexpensive wind turbines out in West Texas. And when it gets cold and they freeze, the grid suffers. And so even Texas has a massive wind energy business. And the irony is that wind energy business is largely sitting on top of their oil business. The oil's in the ground and the wind's in the air.
Yeah.
And so the mineral rights they buy for the ground, they then convert with farmers and ranchers and the like into above ground rights. And it's and hence you get wind farms developed and there's a lot of, and they put a lot of incentive into it. So you think of Texas being a big oil state. The fact is, it's also a huge wind state. It's all because of wind production tax credits out of the federal government, which encourage investing in uninvestable energy sources. Uninvestable because
Let me translate. When you say uninvestable energy sources, meaning energy sources that would never see the light of day if they depended on private people to think that they could get a decent return on it, right? Isn't that
100%? And if you don't believe me, I'm essentially quoting Warren Buffett,
yeah,
who said the reason he invests in wind is because of the tax credit, not because of the net product it produces.
So let me ask you, Rick. Of course, Rick Manning, president of Americans for Limited Government. Have we crossed the Rubicon then in the United States economy where the government is now the economy?
That's a great question. I don't think so, but I think we're getting close. And it's for a lot of different reasons. The government is spending $6.2 trillion last year. Our gross national product was about $24 trillion. So the government's spending about 25% of our total wealth we create. And it's spending, it's not just spending it on employees, it's spending it on things.
Right.
And so government is, in fact, driving they're incentivizing the economy to do certain things, and the Wall Street people, the people who invest in capital, will say, well, this is where the money's at. This is where the government money is being invested. So this is where we're willing to put our money, because we know even though these things could fail, they have the most significant financial backer in the world in the federal government. And so,
yeah, that's what I was getting at. This is like
much less risky investment for a Wall Street guy.
Yeah. The Sovietization of the American economy is one of the greater trends that I've been really concerned about for a long, long time, in which, what's the difference between what Stalin would say, comrade, we're going to have a 5-year plan. We will have more wheat. We will project more wheat 5 years from now, comrade, and we will whip kulaks to make wheat, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And what's the difference between that, really, and then when you have Joe Biden or Tina Kotek in the state of Oregon, for example, saying that we will whip you, you will drive electric car, comrade, by after 2030, no internal combustion engine for you, comrade, that kind of thing. What's the difference, really? Other than maybe a little more smiling.
I think the difference is, and this is going to sound really ugly, but our government doesn't. What it does is it manipulates markets and manipulates and causes businesses to invest in certain ways. So they get people who know what they're doing, not like the, when the Soviets came out with a 5-year plan for wheat production and just but had no idea of how you actually grow wheat.
Yeah.
This is a, and you know, grow wheat anywhere. You know, you don't actually have to have a climate that's suitable for it. Whereas in the case of, where if you kill all the people in Ukraine, all the Cossacks, you lose your wheat production because those people knew how to grow wheat. So that was your, you know, so part of the challenge in the Soviet Stalin system. This is more Hitler saying we need to have auto manufacturing sector, investing in people who know how to make automobiles and putting the resources into those things to create a desire for him, a desirable outcome, which was an industrial sector that could build other things besides Volkswagens. And it's a, and so it's a much more of a, it's much more collaborative than it is dictatorial in that regard. It's why one of the things I keep trying to do is try to separate business, K Street and the multinationals who benefit from various practices, like the, some of the trade practices and the like. Moving jobs to India or China is part of the, you know, just lower labor costs, you know, increase the number of poor people pouring across the border in order to lower labor costs, those kind of things. I separate that group from business as a whole, which is your mid, small-sized business that are largely domestic and, you know, actually been pushing for a while. A radical concept that we should change our corporate tax system to make it so if you are a small business and you only employ people who are legal to work in the United States, that you don't pay any taxes at all in terms of federal corporate tax. Yeah. Leave the corporate tax for everybody else the same. The idea behind it is if the objective is to incentivize the things you want to happen, what I want to happen is I want small businesses to thrive because they're the ones that do most of the hiring, and I want people to be hiring Americans. Hence, you incentivize that by virtue of your tax code, and you leave the tax code for the multinationals alone. Let them fight over the tax credits and all that kind of junk that they fight over on Capitol Hill. And that way, you're not putting a bunch of lobbyists out of work, so you don't end up with a bunch of built-in opposition to the plan.
Okay.
So my political attempt to recreate the incentives in our business economy to be towards hiring Americans and being innovating here.
Oh, you
crazy
know,
concept, huh?
You know what a concept to actually encourage the hiring of actual Americans. It'd be a good thing. Rick Manning of Americans for Limited Government, DailyTorch.com. Yeah, I've been concerned about small business because, of course, we deal with small business here, radio broadcasting, and wanting to make sure and help them. And I'll talk to them. I'll interview people like there's one fellow, Randall, from a local heating and air conditioning company that is always talking about the pressure being put upon them by the federal regulatory state over what they are allowed to sell when it comes to heating and air conditioning. Oh, here it is. It's now time for yet another brand new refrigerant that will be phasing out the old refrigerant. That will mean new equipment that is more expensive, more complex, and more and a tougher time getting it in there. You see what I'm getting in here? And it's like everything top to bottom is being managed right now, and it squeezes these smaller businesses out there.
And believe it or not, that's there are people who lobby to have that happen. And I'm not going to – I wrote about this a few years ago, but in the air conditioning world in particular, remember we used to have Freon and then we had something else. And essentially you can almost time the conversions to when patents run out.
Oh, yeah?
And it's a and so, you know, people have a patent on something, so it runs out, so it's cheaper and available, widely available. So, you know, you have to have a, you know, holes in the ozone layer or something else to justify changing the components to make it so you can sell the next thing that you develop that does the same exact thing as the last thing, but it's different and it has different qualities, and you happen to own it.
Well, this reminds me of when the erectile dysfunction drug goes off patent, and then you start having generics. I mean, oh, they have to come up with a new version of it, right? So they can have another a patent put on the medicine.
Well, it's very similar. And, you know, that's the... It's a business's interest, and you know that's one of the challenges when the government is so big that it can make that it dictates markets.
And that's what I've been concerned about. It dictates markets. It makes the market. And we, the little people that are supposedly the ones that are going to participate in the market, are never asked. It's like, you know, you have your choice, a green car or a green car. Oh, and it's going to cost twice as much as the car that you can afford. Oh, and your pickup truck is not going to exist any longer unless you can buy the Tesla truck at $120,000, that sort of thing.
And, and oh, by the way, we're now going to make our all of our diesel, all of our trucks that carry goods across the country electric.
When there's 25 chargers, when there's like 25 chargers, only 25 chargers available to do it, right? That sort of thing.
And, well, that's a challenge they have. But the fact of the matter is, it drives the cost of everything they haul up, which means, you know, remember the goal is to, eventually the goal is to force everything into us all to live in communes with playing mandolins and playing, and eating locally produced produce, whatever that happens to be. And that's a, you know, so you drive the cost of delivering goods up. You drive the cost of producing them through through mandates that, don't allow for natural gas developed phosphorus fertilizers, and so you create a you drive the cost of your fertilizers up, and you know, so you drive the cost of mass produced food up, at which, and that's a, you know, that's mass produced food has saved more lives in this world than virtually any other invention beyond the ability to get clean water to people.
So what happens when Atlas shrugs someday? Well, I mean, will Atlas ever shrug in this in this push to get us all into the little climate friendly, equitable communities, which is what they call it in Oregon and all the in all the rest of these 15-minute cities, the Klaus Schwab type things? Does Atlas ever shrug, or does Atlas just figure, hey, I'm just going to get down with the plan and I'll make money? You know, with
Well, Atlas shrugs in the following way. Atlas shrugs, yes, Atlas does shrug, but it shrugs in a different way than Ayn Rand described. Because there's no gulch, okay? Let's just be, you know, that's Ayn Rand had to create a fantasy community in the Atlas shrugged in order to have some place for these people to shrug to. What actually will happen is people will just, you know, there's a disincentive to innovate in a way the market would dictate. And so there'll be innovation, but it'll be innovation as dictated by the market, which is the government at that point. And those innovations will, you know, will not increase productivity. They won't increase wealth. They will be, they'll be constrained in very, very narrow constructs. And, you know, people will still get wealthy on it, and they'll still be innovating. But the fact of the matter is, they won't be innovating in any way that is, is wealth producing in a outside the constructs of where they want wealth produced.
Now, see, this is an interesting conversation we're having.
Let me give you the opposite argument where you have sometimes, you know, the government intends one thing and something good happens out of it. Our whole hydraulic fracturing industry, the whole capacity for America to be energy independent, oil independent, is was built based upon Obama trying to price out our oil. Okay, and so they drove the prices up on oil to try to have consumers not be able to drive their cars as much and make electric more appealing. That was the whole purpose of the Obama trying to, you know, the dramatic increases in oil prices during the Obama years, and. And that was, and they were saying, oh, we're going to affect the market by making gas-powered cars more expensive, so we're going to, there'll be less driving and the like. And what they didn't anticipate was that some really smart guys in the oil industry said, well, oil's at $80 a barrel. We can now afford to do this other way of getting oil out of the ground. And so they said they spent their money doing the, taking advantage of technology, which was available, and perfecting that technology and driving and creating a, the whole hydraulic fracturing industry, which made North Dakota the third biggest oil producing state in the nation. And it created a, and in doing so, not only were they able to make a profit at $80 a gallon, they figured out how to make a profit at $60 a barrel and at $30 a barrel. And so, because they made it more efficient, they figured out how to do it. And smart guys, smart engineers figured out how to make something, create an oil boom out of what was intended to be a noose around their neck.
All right, so this is that's interesting. So you think about
that,
Ben.
That's the positive that happens on it.
Okay. Ultimately, then, you have faith in the system that there will be smart people that will outsmart, essentially, the complete shutdown and deindustrializing of the United States of America. Is that where your faith kind of lies on this one, ultimately, Rick?
I have hope.
Oh, okay.
I have seen it occur. Okay, so having seen it occur, you know, and the same is true. And just, I mean, the real problem with this is AI, but we're not going to go down that.
Well, you know, the thing, and by the way, artificial intelligence. Everyone's making a big deal. This is the big play. This is the darling. This is what everyone needs to throw money into. Guess what? They don't have the electric power to run it. I was reading the stats on it. You almost have to triple or quadruple the power produced if you're going to have that AI world, right?
Well, and that's why I think I've told you this in the past, but maybe not. I was reading about this exact problem maybe a month ago. And the contention was that Microsoft has putting AI on a very specific problem that exists. This problem. How do we solve it?
Yeah,
and the answer that they've come up with is mini nuclear plants on their facilities. And so now AI is Microsoft is using AI to try to figure out ways to expedite the government approval process, so they can build miniature.
Well, no, small scale nuclear power plants. In fact, there's a company in Oregon which has been trying to produce this. And, of course, they haven't been able to get people to pay attention to it. Like, they couldn't even tie pork chops around its neck to get the kids to play with it because anti-nuke.
Because it was nuclear, right? But the guys who are sitting there are saying, we're going to need, you know, mass amount of energy, and we can't be dependent upon an external grid. They're trying to do a self-contained energy system. And that's, you know, that's called innovation. Some really smart guys trying to figure out how they can do what they need to do and get around the government, because in this particular instance, the government's interests align with theirs.
That is interesting. That is interesting. Now my irritation though is that AI would say, well, we can certainly come up with enough power for us. You at home though, you'll still have your smart meter and 50 cents a kilowatt hour during peak time.
Absolutely. This is that's no kidding. And, by the way, you want to talk about the dangers of AI and they're kind of going out of control. You know, imagine AI with its self-contained power systems and no ability to turn them off. So that's the only real way you can control AI is to hit an off button somewhere, have a breaker switch. It doesn't provide electricity to them. You get a self-routing, self-electrifying AI. And at that point, it is a life that never dies. You can't kill it.
So that's a
sci-fi warning of the day, but it's actually what Microsoft is developing, exactly what I just described.
Well, let's write the movie script.
If they're doing it, you know Google's doing it. So guess what? You know, one of the other things that they're likely to do, although it's not as wise, it won't be as productive, but there's a lot of technology that for solar panel collection in the ocean, and it's because there's some science involved. I don't know. I just know a guy who developed solar panels that dramatically increased their usage, the energy they created that was based on taking sections of ocean and basically turning it into massive solar panels. There's a lot of stuff out there that's really pretty out there that I'm an expert of some sorts on DC, but the science stuff, you know, I get a B in physics.
Yeah. So. Well, there's wilder stuff going on than we could imagine is essentially what you're telling me.
And that's where your Atlas Shrugged thing happens, because that's where the innovation is. Innovations in things like nanotechnology. I've got a friend who's a former CEO of a nanotech company. And the things they can do are scary, but it's effectively changing. We talked about electric and lithium, right?
Right.
Lithium slaves and the like. fact is, at some point, they're going to, somebody in the nano world is going to figure out how to take lithium and change it, molecularly change it, so it holds a much bigger charge and is, and so very, you need a lot less to do what we need a whole bunch of lithium to do now. When that occurs, it changes the entire battery game.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And that's going to be developed not from traditional scientific inquiry, because we've kind of expressed the limits of what the existing physical element can do. But it's going to be based on somebody in nano figuring out lithium or some other, like silicon, highly, everybody, it's all over the place, yeah. That can be converted into a resource that can hold electricity. It's just because they're dealing at the subatomic level and changing electrons and stuff and making it so so material doesn't behave in the same way that it behaved before.
And well, I'm looking forward to it. That would be really fascinating to keep apprised of that kind of technological development. All I'm saying is that, when I hear the nanotechnology is always fascinating and terrifying at the same time, because you could think that the same technology that could be released, let's say that the doctor injects you with little nanobots that will rebuild your bad knee, right? That kind of thing.
Right.
The same technology that could rebuild your bad knee at some point if they gave that could also be then put in you to wipe you out if AI says, you're a threat to the AI life, and so we better get rid of you pesky humans.
No. and we saw a lot of that concern with the vaccines and the mRNA stuff. It's the same exact idea.
Yeah,
and it's changing people at the genetic level, at the DNA level, and it's at least the RNA level with mRNA.
Right.
But you get down to it. There's a fear factor, and last but not least, for all the people who are really into this, all 12 of them, you have the great goo problem, where the nanobots essentially multiply and never get expelled, and as a result, you end up having you basically die from the nanobots that are supposed to save you.
Oh yeah, they talk about gray goo covering the planet, right? A great book you ought to check out sometime. I talked to him a while back. You ever read Joe Allen's Dark Eon? We read that?
No.
Okay. It's a book came out about 6, 7, 8 months ago, and I interviewed him a couple of times on it. And he goes in and out of this various artificial intelligence, various scripts. And one of them was the talk about nanobots and the gray goo. And it's quite interesting.
Well, it's a real problem, because these things are it's an artificial thing put in our body, and our body is not. Doesn't have ways to expel it, and it's in some cases these things are built to be self-replicating, at which point there's no way to turn them off, and you end up eventually having it consume your body and do more harm than any good it ever did.
Well, when we're talking about this right now, wonder if within about 10, 20 years, though, Rick, we'll be talking about there will be two types of humans, the enhanced Elon Musk type one with the brain implants.
The Neuralink.
The Neuralink. And then everybody else that's claiming, I really just prefer to be human, if at all possible, if it's all right. We'll see. We'll see. That could be the real have and have not. Who knows?
Just look at your kids and grandkids and see if they're connected to the humans or they're connected to their phone.
Uh-huh.
You'll have an answer to where. So how Neuralink. By the way, Google Glasses was an early attempt at doing the same thing.
It was.
It was putting and so there's already the technology. If you think about it, with miniaturization, it's how far are we from them putting essentially the same kind of screen with Neuralink direction in the lenses of our eyes, so you don't actually see anything external, you only see the world that they feed you. Hence, we then live in the Matrix, and it really gets weird. But
yeah.
But those are all possible. That is apart from the Neuralink aspect, which Musk is working on, today that is technologically possible to put essentially a screen that is that's computer fed screen right there into your lenses in your eyes, and that's your technology's there, and the surgery's easy, and it's scary as heck.
Yeah, so. And which leads me to conclude. And what is reality? right? What is reality?
Well,
is reality just how we perceive it, what we perceive? And if you have, you know, the screen essentially implanted into you, what is reality? It is like the, it is the Matrix, essentially, you know, being planned in some ways.
It is the Matrix. In fact, that may be the most prescient movie done in the last 20 years. But I don't think we're going to be sitting there dodging bullets that are going full speed while we are bending and stuff and avoiding them.
Although that was a pretty darn cool movie, I must say. All right,
very cool, very very cool movie. And that's far afield. That's far afield from where we were. But the fact of the matter is, government is driving a lot of the research and the and all of that, you know, kind of discussion on that. Mm-hmm. And a government, the challenge that exists is. Our system of government is designed to be very slow. Our last major change in communications laws were before the internet actually existed in mass. And so you end up with the, you know, a lot of things happening without any discussion of the overall of whether this is something that's wise to have occur.
In other words, Congress hasn't even pulled on its pants, and yet everything's raced in past it, right?
And so at that point, what happens is that Congress then defers to the people who know what they're doing, and which at one point were the bureaucrats, but now it's the technocrats.
Yeah.
In Silicon Valley and the like.
Yeah, well, all I can say is that
deference creates an interesting alliance between business and government.
And government. My concern is, though, is that I really don't like the idea of technocrats wanting to implant my brain as being the ones driving government policy. But that'll be a conversation for next week and beyond, okay?
I think that would be a really bad idea, but the fact is, it is. I merely describe what's technologically possible.
Well, you're also describing, though, what is going on ultimately. And that's why we get a little, you know, it's like, did anybody really ask to ring the entire planet with satellites? That's just one example of Elon Musk's hubris, as far as I'm concerned. He just did it, right?
Well, you know what? He did. And from a public good standpoint, it's the one way we break the stranglehold that the people who control the internet now have.
Except ultimately, Elon Musk's Starlink will be Starnet, or will be
I get it. The Terminator. I get it. It is
Skynet is what I was thinking of. Skynet. You know, because the model's there, and nobody ever thinks about where it goes from that point. Oh yeah, sure. Well, you bring internet to the Savannah. To the Serengeti, you know, like the Africa song, right? You know, that sort of thing.
Right.
But what happens long term? Conversation for later. But, you know, this was a fun philosophical conversation this time. I appreciate that. And that's what I love about noodling with you. Every now and then we just get off on a tangent. But it is all connected. The government's driving it, for sure. Okay.
We're all connected, and the government's driving it. Let's just not say that out loud on the radio so nobody hears it, okay?
Oh, no, I did that.
It sounds a little conspiratorial, and one thing we know for sure out of all this is the FBI is listening. So have fun with that.
I will, and have a great weekend, Rick. Rick Manning, President of Americans for Limited Government, DailyTorch.com. Check him out there, and so much more. We'll see you soon. Take care. It's 10 after 7, KMED, KCMD. It is KMED Medford, KCMD Grants. No, let me try this again. I'm going to do the proper legal ID because the FCC may be listening. This is KMED and KMED HD1, Eagle Point Medford, KCMD Grants Pass. There we go. Mr. Outdoors standing by. And whether there is AI, you know, monitoring you out in the wild, we'll talk about all the fun things to do there next.
Spring is here.